today is Thursday. It is April 4th, 2019.
doing great job.
And this week, for the first time ever, a player born in the 21st century played in a Major League Baseball game.
What?
I got to get my head around what you just said.
They're 19 years old.
A player, right, a 19-year-old that made his debut in Major League Baseball. I don't know which team or his name.
Somebody born after the year 2000.
He's the first player to born in the 21st century.
And I think this is the first year that no player who played in 1999 is still playing.
Opening day, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is really a portentous.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
Wait a minute. I didn't even say I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record weekly in the studios of WGN. And the reason that I even paused on that was because today is also the date that the White Sox were going to begin their homestand, but it was delayed because of the inclement weather we're having. Not because I was having a Trumpian orange origin moment,
right,
although we will be getting to that. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host weeknights 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN+.
And I'm Eric Zarn, the orange original blogger at the Chicago Tribune. And I still write a column 3 days a week.
I know we're not going to do Trump till later, but my phone just dinged, and he's named Herman Cain, to the Fed.
What?
Okay.
All right.
The same Herman Cain that...
Who squeezed women.
We'll get to Joe Biden in a little bit, too. Oh. Lori Lightfoot's the new mayor of Chicago. The Tribune's page one photo today is of Lightfoot holding hands with Tony Preckwinkle and Reverend Jesse Jackson. Go figure, Jesse would find a way in that photo. They prayed that, in the words of Reverend Marshall Hatch, that no longer will zip codes determine life options for innocent children. In today's Sun-Times, Lightfoot's win is the only story they report on for the first 11 pages, and the coverage in the Tribune is deep, too. Lightfoot's win was broad-based and large. She won 74% of the vote. At WGNRadio.com, we asked our listeners to tell us how they feel about her victory, and 83% were positive. In fact, 21% said she will be a game changer. Eric, is she going to be a game changer?
I think she will be, yeah.
Not because of who she is, but what she'll do. She'll actually significantly change Chicago.
Well, not just on her own. I think there's going to be a sea change in the city council. You have a bunch of new members. I think up to 14 new aldermen will be on the council. Lori Lightfoot is very smart, and she's very tough. I think we've seen this in some of her end of debate. We saw it when she squared off with Martwick before the general election. And I think she's going to be able to push through some things. And, yeah, I think Chicago is going to change under her.
She has this unassuming demeanor. I mean, the video of her walking into the fifth floor yesterday, City Hall, to meet with Rahm Emanuel, she just kind of was walking on her own and sort of with no air about her. I mean, I just think it's a completely different sort of personality than anyone who's held the office since I've been around.
And
her.
I think that was true throughout the campaign. She never really, never got riled up. She always seems to have an even keel about things. Even when as you mentioned, she had a square off in a sort of public argument. She just stayed the course. And
but she seems, I'm sorry.
Yes,
she
ahead.
Seems tough as nails, and I
yes.
love that because that's what it's going to take. You still have the machine. It's not dead. It's a little bruised, but it's not. It hasn't gone away. And people like that don't go away. You're talking about money and power, and they don't let go of those two things easily. I'm hoping for transparency and honest government, which we have not had for, ever.
She strikes me as a little humorless. Is that a fair assessment of her personality?
She's not highly charismatic, I would say, in terms of having a megawatt smile or having this real ability to connect with people and crowds and so on. But she has a real sort of quiet, focused intelligence. I think some of this toughness is part of her training as an attorney, defense attorney and prosecutor. She's very tough, very focused.
I feel like, don't you feel like she holds her cards very close to the vest?
Yes.
I think that seems to be
in
the way
some ways.
She...
There's something interesting going on, which is that Alderman Burke is either going to be indicted or not by, I think, May 3rd is the deadline. And they've agreed to that he's in charge now, but he hasn't been indicted. And there may be other indictments coming down. And you have, so I think that we may see Burke has completely been defanged on the city council. He's the veteran.
He got reelected.
And he got reelected, but yeah. he lost his committee as finance committee chair, and his replacement, Alderman O'Connor, was beaten on Tuesday. So, I agree with Scott that political machines never totally die off, but this one is wounded. And if and during her Tribune editorial board session, Lightfoot indicated that she maybe had some inside knowledge that there were going to be more aldermen caught up in whatever they're going to be calling the, you know, happy ending, Operation Happy Ending, whatever they're going to be calling.
Oh, let's not call it that.
But I think this is transformative, this election, because of Lightfoot, sure. But the loss of Pat O'Connor on the north side, I mean, that's the end of an era there. And who's left from that era? I mean, Burke still is here, but maybe not for long. And when you talk about the machine, I don't know where that machine is anymore.
I don't know who it is exactly either. In terms of like who's going to be the dean, who's going to be the most powerful alderman in the, on the council? Scott Wagaspak.
Do you guys believe that part of the reason people voted for her was because, in some part, the same reason people voted for Donald Trump? They just wanted somebody who was different.
Disruption. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I also think the, and as we mentioned on my show on Tuesday night, Scott and I were talking. I saw this post. Someone said every ward where people drink soda voted for Lori Lightfoot, which was, of course, every single
every
ward.
Every ward voted for Lori Lightfoot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she swept all 50, right? 74%, 2,000.
Almost won every precinct. Yeah. Only a handful of precincts.
I think Perkwinkle won four.
They were they were daily-esque numbers.
That's why, you know, because Rahm's were 56%, right? And so Rahm felt pretty good about that. This was 74%. I was just disappointed in the whole 5-week run-up because I never really sensed a great difference. It just didn't, this, the, you know.
Between them?
Yeah. Really? Did I miss a lot there?
I wrote about that. I think that in terms of major policy positions, they were very similar. And I think one of the reasons why turnout wasn't any bigger than it was there were a number of people who said, you know what? Either way, I'm A, happy, or B, not going to be happy. Because they were two progressive female African-American mayoral candidates. And you look down the line at how they were talking about housing, how they were talking about police, how they were talking about schools. I mean, there were some differences, but they weren't like huge differences. This wasn't Rauner against Pritzker or Trump against Clinton. These were two people who are very close to each other.
I think policy-wise, you're correct. But I think in terms of their connection with the machine, in terms of hope for progressive or, you know, just clean government, they were as different as night and day. You had Tony Preckwinkle, who seemed to be, every scandal that broke, she seemed to be tied into the guy. Berrios first, of course, and then Burke. And Lightfoot didn't have that. And again, she's a breath of fresh air. I think that's why people voted for her.
I hope she doesn't break our hearts.
Jim Allen from the Board of Elections had something interesting about the turnout low. And he said, this is what you see in landslide elections because people already figure it's over. I mean, this race seemed to be over.
That's why we should have ranked choice voting.
The polls that were out the week before the election showed a huge margin for Lightfoot. And I thought, well, that's too bad. I think she was in the 60s,
right.
But it turned out that okay. the margin was even
okay. You wrote a piece where that you think that Lincoln Yard should maybe be stopped now, or
well, they're having their the TIF, the tax incentive for the Sterling Bay, is coming up in front of the council next week, and they're kind of rushing this whole thing through. It's just kind of a legacy project for Rahm Emanuel. And my argument was, and it's the same argument that John Cass made, which is a very interesting, John and I are often not on the same page, but we were today, which is that, you know, you have a new mayor. The city overwhelmingly elected a new mayor, and Lightfoot throughout the campaign has said, you know, delay this TIF vote. This is $1.3 billion of property tax money that's going to go to Sterling Bay so that they can do these infrastructure improvements that they need to make their project there on the near northwest side.
Infrastructure projects that you and I will drive over.
Yes, but infrastructure projects are going to help them make tons and tons of money. I think they can go on the private market and get their own loans and do this that's necessary. That land is not going to become a frozen tundra. It's going to be developed by somebody. It's too attractive a parcel. And I just feel like at the very least they should wait. Because we basically have a lame duck council. The person in charge of the finance committee is Alderman O'Connor. He's on his way out. We have 14 new aldermen coming in. We've got a new mayor coming in, a new mayor who's very skeptical of this project. I think it's time to wait. And people were saying, well, isn't this like, you know, Merrick Garland? And I said, no, this is after the election.
But it is like, in a way, Amazon in New York. You know, after the election, Ocasio comes in, starts bad-mouthing the development there, and Amazon pulls the plug on that project. And
Amazon pulled the plug, right. But the city did not.
The city did not, but the tenor there chased them out of it.
Do you think that's wrong?
What?
I think the phenomenon you're describing, I don't think ill serves the people of New York, and maybe that's what Chicago should have too.
You think it doesn't ill serve the people of New York that there are tens of thousands of high-paying jobs that are gone now for development of a neighborhood?
I don't know. Ask the people in Seattle how they feel about it, or the Northwest. I don't know the answer to that, Steve, but I think they get to decide.
I think they are deciding. The elected people are deciding now. I understand what you're saying, Eric, but I don't like this idea of new people coming in and closing the door on business development.
I'm not sure that it would close the door. I mean, certainly, I mean, there's lots to talk about this project and the size and scope of it and what the, you know, the parks are doing and so on. But when you have a property that is so valuable, you know where it is. It's right there. It's between Lincoln Park and Bucktown, right in Wicker Park. It's that area.
Right along the Kennedy Expressway.
Right along the Kennedy Expressway.
It's amazing there's that much land in that spot available for somebody.
The old Finkelsteel site there. Yeah. And it is an amazingly ripe piece of land. It's not going to go undeveloped. This is not like Amazon, where if Sterling Bay goes away, then no one's going to develop that area. It will be developed.
I'm just tired of not doing things.
Oh, I see.
You know, that's what we do. We not do things.
I see that, but given that how fast this seems to be being rushed through, and especially the TIF question, which is again, this is property tax money that's being set aside to be allocated for a private developer's project, basically.
Okay, we're moving on to Trump land now. You guys ready for this?
It's like there's a horse loose in a hospital.
First, we'll start with the Mueller report. Mueller's team wrote a summary that we haven't seen. I guess that's logical, but I didn't even think about that. Attorney General William Barr wrote a summary. That was the four pages that we were all able to digest. But Mueller wrote a summary, too. And now the 19 attorneys and 50 FBI agents are saying that Barr's summary does not adequately reflect.
Well, some of them, not all, they haven't come out in mass and saying, but there have been reports that people.
The New York Times and Washington Post are reporting that some of the people who did the report are saying that the Barr report understates the danger to the president.
Right.
And that they had written summaries that they assumed were going to be made public. They made summaries of each portion of the investigation that they felt summarized and would not have to be redacted, that those were going to be available for public consumption.
We're going to see the report, right?
We better. We paid for it.
I've been saying that with confidence all along. The same way I said Trump wouldn't win the primary. Say that again?
No, don't say that.
The money that they were able to, that's with the fines and everything from Manafort and everything that they did from that.
I know, but I don't like balance sheets on investigations.
Saying that we paid for it is also not accurate then.
I know, but to say, well, we milked this much out of someone we investigated.
But it did reap some of the, we were able to crack what was going on and white-collar crimes that rarely ever get prosecuted to this extent and what he was up to.
Whoever, regardless of the balance sheet, Patty, you're saying that since the American taxpayers paid for this report, we automatically have some right to expect the return,
right?
That's
what Scott said.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I disagree with that, too, because there are...
Why?
Well, let me just finish. What?
You're exasperating today. Go ahead.
There are a lot of national security investigations or reports or the daily presidential brief. We are paying for that. I don't think it's good for us to necessarily see it.
Well, sure. I mean, redact what you have to.
I like transparency.
And don't redact a lot, but I don't know, Scott, what do you want to say?
I like transparency. I like 100% transparency. I think that's important. I think any time that a government is allowed to hide what it's doing, bad things tend to happen. Well, compromise position on this is I think there are some things in this report, probably some grand jury testimony that is going to involve people's privacy. Grand jury testimony is supposed to be secret. There are some things that probably could be redacted. I would like to see some of these people, as Mueller himself and maybe some of his deputies, subpoenaed, called to testify, come in, have them read their summaries in front of Congress.
That works.
I think we're going to see a lot of. I mean, I know we're complaining about this and we're champing at the bit to find out what happened here, but I think that we will. I agree with John that this is going to come out. Significant portions of it, most of it's going to come out. You're seeing the Trump administration being and the Republicans themselves being a lot less enthusiastic about having the report out than they were. But right after it came out, they're like, oh, let everybody see it. Great. It exonerated the president. Now they're like, well, maybe not.
And they haven't seen it themselves. I do not believe the members of Congress have had a chance to read this.
No, they have not.
So some of the debate is whether or not even the members of Congress will see an unredacted version, right?
And I think they should be allowed to. They're allowed to see a lot of things.
I think they should, but I think they've been told that, or Barr said he's going to send them a redacted version.
Correct.
Which I think is wrong. I think the members of Congress, at least the leaders or the Intelligence Committee, should absolutely see all of it.
Well,
absolutely.
I don't like getting all amped up and then rushing into a decision or an action, but the more time that lapses, the less urgent this becomes, the less likely it is to happen. I do think they need to keep this thing on the front burner, and this thing needs to be released as quickly as possible. Those men and women that worked on the report have a pretty good clue what's sensitive and is not. It's 400 pages. They've had a few weeks to read it. They've got teams of people that can pore over this. If they really wanted to release it, they could have by now.
I agree with you.
There's three things that are on my mind, and I'm just going to lump them together because in a way they all fall under his mental health. And I think that to say his mental health is a very easy way to make fun of this guy because you just don't like him, and so you say he's crazy. Some strange things have been happening lately that aren't entirely that.
Knock,
right?
Knock, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Banana.
Banana who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
You remember that one? And it ends with who's there, and finally it's orange. And
orange, you say, you're glad I didn't say banana?
Orange, you're glad I couldn't say origin?
Okay, so the president was giving a speech, and he was doing his usual thing, and he was running down Hillary and talking about how great it is and how bad the Mueller report is and stuff like that. And he tried to use the word origin.
No collusion, no obstruction. I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation. You look at the origin of the investigation, where it started, how it started, the oranges, how it started, the beginnings of the investigation.
Orange. He paused to fix it, and then he fixed it again, but the second time he got it wrong. The third time, I think he got it about half right. The fourth time, he said orange again. Each time afterwards, or a few of the times afterwards, he would define what he meant because he realized he could not say the word origin.
What is three syllables?
You see, that's the problem. This is not that. This is not, oh, he's a dummy. This is something neurochemically was happening. And he was, I think, as surprised by it as we were. Have you seen it? He's got a troubled look on his face.
Can't say origin.
I can't do that word. People on Twitter, and that's where I get all my medical information, are saying that that is not inconsistent with symptoms of people who have had a stroke. This is what begins to or does happen. I don't know what it was, but it sure was weird.
It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen because he knew he was using the wrong word, but he couldn't not use it. And then he was so aware of it that he started to say it again, and he said the beginnings of. Like, he used a different word because he knew he couldn't say origin. And then he went back 2 minutes later in the sort of monologue and said orange again.
That is bizarre.
I've never seen anything like it.
I yield to no one in my concern about and contempt for Donald Trump, but I think this may just be a word that he has trouble saying. And people have words like
that. I used to not be able to, yes.
John, you were saying on your show the other day you can't remember the Tivoli Theater. You were always saying that wrong. I mean, that...
I used to not be able to say Adirondack, but I can do it. I worked on it.
I used to not, when I first started broadcasting, be able to say Social Security, which is terrible for someone in radio news.
Social Security?
Yeah.
We have to slow down. That's the hard part.
But this was a little different. This was where we've never heard this happen before. I'm sure he's used the word origin before. And you could see he knew he was saying the wrong word, but he couldn't stop it. It was, you should see it. Really.
Well, no, I did. I watched it a couple of times, actually.
And couple that with what happened with him telling people where his father was from. And my father, from this beautiful town in Germany. His dad was born in New York.
He said it three times.
Yeah.
In The Art of the Deal, he writes that his dad was from Sweden.
I'm so okay. confused.
It's just very strange. I mean, he lies. He just makes stuff up. It doesn't really matter.
You said there's
to him.
A third thing, John?
The third thing was his assertion that wind power may cause cancer somehow.
Yeah,
via the noise of the mills.
If you have a windmill anywhere near your house, congratulations. Your house just went down 75% in value. And they say the noise causes cancer. You told me that one, okay? You know, the thing makes sense.
I have heard things, the people who live near windmills have elevated levels of some maladies of one form or another. I'm not sure that that's completely, I mean, it may not be true, but it's not like he's the first guy to ever think of it.
He said it was from the noise, and I don't think, I mean,
then
there
he
have been some
the noise.
Conspiracy theories yeah. about the noise. Well, he also made fun of Joe Biden for touching women.
My people tell me 2 years. What do you think? 1 week, sir. I said, General, come here. Give me a kiss. I felt like Joe Biden.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's so weird to hear, you know, hear people talking about it. Well, I'd rather have someone smell my hair than grab me by the, you know, and so then it becomes that conversation, which is all wrong.
This Joe Biden thing makes me angry because, let's just put it this way. The idea that the mainstream media is in cahoots with the Democrats and it's this left-wing font, I think, blows up this week because they're interviewing anybody whose hair he smelled, and we're giving full hearing to their grievance. And I think it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous on its face. And in the world of Access Hollywood tapes, it's just insane to think that this is disqualifying or even relevant.
It is interesting. I don't think any of the women who have made allegations against him have said that they were at all sexual and directly sexual in nature. With Al Franken, he was like grabbing their rear ends and so
pretending
on, right?
To.
But with Biden, it's just kind of like he's just a little too close. He's rubbing my nose. He's sniffing my hair. He's rubbing my shoulders.
Yeah, there was a nose.
He did a nose to nose
Eskimo kiss thing.
Or no, was it a forehead to nose? He got in someone's nose, Patty. Patty, get back to your microphone. No. Patty's on the floor.
But these are You know, I just think it's someone who doesn't have that sense of it's not a sexual thing. It's more of a sort of a male dominance thing because he doesn't do it to men.
He doesn't kiss men's hair, but I bet he's very touchy with men.
Well,
I don't think
he's talking about hugs and things like that. Not as much, but when you see him grab a woman by the waist and he's rubbing their shoulders, and he's whispering in their ear. And it's what's interesting to me is that, and I've done this. I've just let people. My entire life, guys that put their arm around me and tussled my hair, and you just don't say anything because you're like, this is what people do, and it is icky, and I don't like people invading my space like that. I'm sorry. I have, and now it's less likely. When I go to hug somebody, I say, may I? Just because I want to start establishing, really.
I think the may I completely shatters the moment of the intent.
I understand that, but what I'm telling you is that I've been touched by men the same way that Biden touched, and I'm glad that we're talking about it. I know that people are annoyed, and well, that's just the way he is, but you had plenty of callers, like that woman who said that her father-in-law is like 87 years old, and we try to chalk it up to the fact that he's older. Well, and I told Scott this before. It doesn't matter how old the woman is because it feels the same to her when
she called him a lech.
But that caller was accusing her father-in-law of being a lech.
Holding their hands.
Of grabbing them for sexual reasons.
Right.
I don't think that's the case with Biden. And as I continue to try to evolve in all of this,
me too.
Yeah, I mean... We confuse any physical contact with sexual contact,
but the recipient.
So from a guy's standpoint, it's like this is clearly not sexual. You need to understand it for that.
I think there's something. I think there's dominance. There's other elements involved.
Finish that thought.
I didn't finish.
I'm sorry. Okay.
So it's like clearly this wasn't sexual. What is the offense here? But what I'm learning from women is that it's not. It doesn't have to be sexual.
The intent doesn't matter.
Right.
The intent doesn't matter. Whatever your or Joe Biden or mine, when I'm mugging for a picture with a bunch of ladies at an event, my intent doesn't matter. You can't do that.
I'm not going to. I may not go up and hug a woman because I want to have sex with her. That's not the case. But it's still equally offensive.
It's funny. Steve Cochran noticed this once at a show because audience members at a comedy show would come up to me and hug me, and I would say, "Oh, we're hugging." And he goes, "You don't like to be hugged, do you?" And I said, "No, I really." And I've had to teach myself to be okay with hugging. And people think it's funny. They'll hold me longer, like, "Oh, you don't like this, do you?" And I get a panic attack sometimes because of my experiences. But every single person, I will say this, is different. There are women who like it and are touchy as well. So I understand that it's confusing. I think it's a good conversation. I'm just asking people to listen.
I interviewed a pretty famous author one time, the woman, and she, I shook hands after the interview. I said, "That was very nice. Thank you very much." She goes, "No, I'm a hugger."
Right.
And she completely collapsed on me.
Seriously?
Absolutely.
And that woman is his wife.
I felt embraced.
Right.
I mean, I felt nice about it. It's like, well, this is nice. She cares enough to hug me.
I agree with Patty. This is a great conversation to have. Any man who enjoys, touching women socially in this way without this sexual intent needs to think twice about it. This national conversation we're having inspires a lot of people to like think twice about moving in for a hug or rubbing somebody's shoulders or sniffing their hair or waggling their nose. I think that's a That's a good thing.
I also, what I've been telling my audience is I understand that a lot of people are feeling defensive, like, oh, now, and you're sort of second guessing everything. And I don't want people to feel attacked either. I also just want to honor those who are feeling like, that's how I feel when my boss does that or when a stranger does that. It's unsettling sometimes.
Well, between this and the Me Too movement, there are times where you feel the whole social norm shift, right? And sometimes it takes a while, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm thinking about drinking and driving, and we've finally decided, or wearing seatbelts, or having a gay mayor. You can feel that sometimes things that were radically different are now suddenly the new norm. And sometimes those things happen more quickly. And I'm telling you, the way men interact with women, men of a certain generation, I do think it's generational. This is kind of a whiplash for them. I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. I want the world to appreciate how different this affects on a very personal level people's behavior.
I will say, when you said that it shatters it when someone says, may I for a hug, for me, I would find it very kind and sweet to sort of ask for permission, you know, in a way that does, it just does. It's gentle.
So is this disqualifying for Joe Biden as a president?
He came out with a video yesterday and seemed to take the right tone. You know, said, look, I get it.
Social norms have begun to change. They've shifted. And the boundaries of protecting personal space have been reset. And I get it. I get it. I hear what they're saying. I understand it. And I'll be much more mindful. That's my responsibility.
So what else can you ask of him, right?
Right.
I could ask him not to run.
Yeah.
But, I think this is another sign he clearly is going to run. And I think he did answer it well.
Right.
But why are we even having this conversation if he's not running for president?
Because he's leading in the polls. And he spoke to the fire official union a while ago and said, I got a big announcement coming up in April. So, I mean, he's given every sign he's going to run.
Yeah, I don't think the touchy-feely stuff is going to disqualify him. I think the fact that he's 77 years old, a corporatist, and has been a failed presidential candidate two times before will have a lot to do with that.
And so his stance on a lot of things, I think, will also, you know, whether it was the Clarence Thomas hearings, he'll have a lot of audio that is not.
Well, he's a lackey for the banks and the corporations that incorporate in Delaware.
It's there amazing how the negative things have so much more weight than the positive things. You know, so we're going to go back to the Anita Hill hearings from 30 years ago and not to the Obama administration, what he's done there, or the cancer moonshotter. You know, those things aren't going to come into account. But what he did when he plagiarized in 1975 is going to sink him.
And that's it's true for any candidate, unfortunately. It's true in life. The negative things are louder.
Well, it's not true for the incumbent, but
no,
it was in play. I mean, but you know, every negative thing they could find about Donald Trump was on full display, except his tax returns, was on full display for the electorate to decide.
And I think, and what I'm saying, I'm not saying that it's right or that's what I go to, but I've already heard that in the media, and you double that with all the you know, sniffing women's hair.
No, I agree.
And the audio and the visual.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think the negatives do weigh more than the positive, which is too bad sometimes.
I mentioned the president's tax returns. Eric, are we going to see the president's tax returns?
Well, they're making an effort, right? They've subpoenaed them from the House.
I don't think it's a subpoena yet, is it? It's a request.
They have a right to ask.
Speaker Pelosi said today, she goes, look, it's precedent. The IRS has never turned down a committee request for someone's tax documents. Apparently, it's written that the IRS is required by law to do this if they're requested by the supervising committee that they are required to do it.
And they want 6 years.
Right. 6 years. What's now, the reason that they're asking
for? Well, I don't know that. And I think they need to provide a rationale to do it in order to get it. They can't just be seen as knowing there's great stuff in there.
Well, originally it was that.
Tell us there's gotta
originally
be a
reason, it was to call out Trump for not being as rich as he was, but the Congress has no interest in that, or should not. I think now you could tie to the Russia investigation and see if there's any compromising deals that he was cutting with the Russians. And I mean, wouldn't that be a reason for it?
Yeah, I think they're looking for him misstatements on loan applications. They're looking for any money that he's getting from odd sources and so on. There's all kinds of stuff that can be found.
But do they have to have a rationale for looking before they ask? I mean, I don't know.
I hope so.
I would, too. I mean, I have every confidence that they'll find all kinds of stuff in there.
But I would hope that
they just can't ask because they can't.
Go fishing, because what if there is something bad there? There ought to be some rationale for it.
Yeah.
I'm out of time. Anything else you guys want to bring up on the podcast today?
I'm really glad that I'm rooting for the White Sox this year because the Cubs are so awful.
Oh, I was going to ask, and Bertrand just walked out of the studio. Is it too late to start to worry about the Cubs?
Is it too late?
Oh, too early. Is it too early?
Too late. Forget it. It's all done.
Well, that's where my head is. It's too late. They're not going to be in the playoffs. Is it too early to worry about the Cubs?
Yes. I think it's too early.
Oh, yeah.
They were always going to lose more than four games, right? I mean, this is a long season.
No, five.
Have they lost five already?
Well, no, but they've played five. If you lose four of every five games, you're not going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're probably not going to lose four of every five games. But it just doesn't look like it's their year. They're certainly not very sharp, and they're not making the trades they need to make and whatever. Bullpen looks iffy.
Yeah, and Epstein back, you know, supporting the bullpen, saying, it's fine, it's fine. Okay.
Well, was it Epstein that said, not every pitching performance is a, what's the word? Oh no, I can't think of a word. Oranges.
What's the origin
or something,
of this problem?
But not is a sort of reflection of the season we're going to have.
Well, you'd like to start obviously in a positive way, but for the first time since I was a kid, I'm not as emotionally invested in the Cubs this year. So I've been watching all of my friends implode online. And it's
watch the White Sox games.
I am.
You know, here's what I've discovered, that you and I could all be Cleveland Indian fans if we started to read about the Cleveland Indians and follow their batting performances and see what the people are saying. You know, I mean, that's how anybody develops an interest in something, is you just sort of immerse yourself in it. I've been doing that, and I find myself really into the White Sox now.
I think more importantly, listen to the White Sox games.
Yes, that would be lovely.
Oh, yeah, on WGN Radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for that plug.
Watching them will just ruin it.
All right, we've got 30 seconds each. This is, we're trying this. This is kind of in a beta stage, but let's continue to try it.
Do I have to
time
myself while I'm doing this?
Yes, you get 30 seconds. It can be a rant. It can be a review. It can be a recommendation. It could be a story you wished we had talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You have the last 30 seconds. Scott, are you ready?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, well, it was a good run while it lasted. I actually predicted the race in the Alabama Senate race to the 1.5% difference. It was exactly that. I called the Rauner Pretzker race right on, and then this race happened.
I know. I was thinking about you.
I predicted in the last Mincing Rascals recording that this would be closer than we thought, maybe even as close as 4%, which will teach everyone listening to this podcast, yes, we're pundits, and we have no idea what we're talking about.
You meant 40% is what you meant. That's what you meant to say.
Case Histories is a TV show I've been watching on Amazon, and it stars Jason Isaacs. It's a British show, but it's set in Edinburgh, and it's this guy who finds missing people. I really like it, and I'm recommending it because of John Williams. You know, when you go to Edinburgh later this month, you need to watch this show because they've got great scenes of Edinburgh, the Firth of Forth, Edinburgh Castle, the Royal Mile, and all that, the Grass Market.
Which castle?
Edinburgh Castle.
Yeah, right.
And so my recommendation is this really cool show, Case Histories. It is on Amazon.com.
How much time did that take?
I didn't set a clock. How did I do?
Felt like 30.
It felt long.
Oh, thank you very much.
To be honest with you.
We can cut out John going whoop whoop.
All right, Eric Zorn, you got 30 seconds. 3, 2, 1, go.
Someone needs to tell President Trump about the glorious wonder that is the mute feature on Twitter. Last year, the Knight First Amendment Institute filed suit contending that President Trump violated the First Amendment when he blocked certain critics from following @RealDonaldTrump. His lawyers argue that Twitter is his private megaphone and that when he blocks a particular user from reading or replying to his tweets, he's exercising his right to choose with whom he will engage in speech. He lost the case. It's recently been argued on appeal. But instead of blocking trolls, taunters, and stalkers, he should simply mute them. They can see what he tweets, but he never sees what they tweet, and they never even know he doesn't see them. It works with email, too. It's a beautiful thing. Mute.
We started a new segment on my show called With Kind Words, and it's been wonderful to watch people when I ask them, what's the kindest thing someone has said or done for you, and whether it's been recent or somewhere in your life? And they really, the look on their face, they start reflecting on the wonderful things that, whether it was someone paying for a coffee in front of them in line at Starbucks, or letting them in traffic when they didn't have to, or something that a mentor said to them in college. But watching a memory flash across someone's face has been wonderful, inspiring, and I recommend that everyone take a moment maybe every day and think of something kind that someone else has done, because I think it inspires you to do that for others.
30 seconds for me. Forgive me if this is an abuse of the bit, but I'm going to take the remaining 27 seconds to say I want you to go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson. That's where you'll see a video of me and Thomas Jefferson on stage at a show that we did where I interview him. You get to ask questions, too. We're doing another one of those shows Saturday, May 18th at 10 a.m. at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, and you can get tickets at WGNradio.com/Jefferson. I want you to go not just because I think you'll enjoy it, but because America will be a better place if you do. 30 seconds.
Woo-hoo! Man, it's a gift.
It's a broadcaster.
It's there. A gift.
I think mine was 33. And
you said Tivoli or Tivoli.
I said Tivoli, and I think I got it correct.
Adirondack.
Time now to say goodbye, Patty Vasquez. Thanks for coming in. Eric Zorn, Scott Standis, Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams. Mincing Rascals is produced by LF Garrison. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.